So, tell me about your problems. Disclaimer. The views and opinions expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show.
This one's really hot.
Hey everybody, welcome to AnCast Live at Anime Expo 2013. You may notice that we are in the anime music video room. So not on the main program grid, so we have a small but loyal crowd here today. Thank you guys so much for showing up. Joining me as always is co-host Justin Spakis.
Hey everyone.
And come on. And for the first time in a live show, we actually have guests, because we have 90 minutes to fill, and yeah, okay. So joining us on stage, one of our many extremely difficult guests to get on this show, somebody just, we try and get him on, never have him on, it's Mike Toole, everybody.
Ohio gozaimasu. I'll be rocking the mic for a while, and then we have someone else will take my place, right?
We're going to rotate. We got a couple more.
Very good.
Yes. This is how this goes. We've got 90 minutes to fill. We're going to chat with our guests a little bit, but the main thrust of this is that you ask questions, and I have prizes for you. Once again this year, I have a good bag and a bad bag, and I'm just going to arbitrarily decide which one you get. But let's start with Mike, because you've been experiencing Anime Expo this year sort of from the ground, actually going to a lot of panels and events and stuff, so I want your take on it so far.
I love the energy, I love the enthusiasm, incredibly high cosplay levels going on. I think it's a bit crowded, guys, don't you?
Yeah.
There's kind of crowd and line issues. It is kind of biting my enjoyment a little. I feel like a lot of the panels, they don't start seating until the panel start time. So the panel doesn't start until 15 minutes after start time, and then they end a few minutes early to try and mitigate that. But other than that, I'm having a fantastic time. This is pretty cool.
What's, the best thing you've seen so far?
What is the best thing I've seen so far? Well, I loved going to the Studio Trigger panel yesterday and watching Little Witch Academia with, 500 other people. That was cool. And, of course, there was the good news. There's a good news right after that Trigger are going to do a second Little Witch Academia episode, and they're going to fund a media release of it with Kickstarter. So that's going to be awesome. I cannot wait.
Kickstarter. How original.
Yeah. Kickstarter. What's Kickstarter?
And you also wrote up the premiere of the Russian IG short Kick Heart for us.
Yeah, that was also a great experience. It's easy to get cynical about con life when you come to these things and you see plenty of people into anime, but also people into Homestuck and My Little Pony and Star Trek and Harry Potter and whatnot. What was really cool that I liked about the Kick Heart panel is that the director, Masaki Yuasa, just kind of tried to slip into the room, but people spotted him and the entire room busted out into wild applause. It's like, yeah, that was cool. And that's something you don't see at a lot of cons. A lot of times the Japanese guests on the production side are kind of anonymous, and I think too anonymous. You got to give those guys props. But Kick Heart was awesome, too. I'm thrilled to have helped back that project. It's a really cool cartoon, and I can't wait until we get it all in our hot little hands.
I was kind of used to Yuasa's more lackadaisical, slow-paced work, so I was really kind of delighted at how fast and funny it is.
Yeah, it's 12 minutes that it feels like it goes by in 30 seconds, and you laugh your ass off. It's really good stuff.
I got a chance to see it, and it's totally liquid television. That is...
Oh my God, absolutely.
Yeah.
It would be right at home on MTV in 1995.
Yeah. You could even split it into 3-minute chunks, and it would work perfectly.
Right. No, it's cool. It was really cool. So, anything else?
Anything else? Let's see. Kick Heart. I went to the Titmouse panel last night. That was cool too. They're the American studio that does a lot of programming for Cartoon Network and Nicktoons. They're the Motor City guys. They just took over animation production for Venture Brothers, and they have a new cartoon coming out called Disco Destroyer. And to me, it looked an awful lot like kind of a cheap, weird, like, you know, bum wine, like Thunderbird version of Redline. So I'm all over that. I'm all about that. And yeah, I talked to the guys at the studio. It turns out they did a little bit of subcontractor work for Redline. So, you know, it's all a big circle.
So it's essentially just one animation studio. The whole world, just everyone has had a hand in Redline.
Pretty much,
over
yeah.
Over a decade, every animator.
Pretty much, yeah. The head of the studio said that, yeah, they had some, like, you know, last-minute cleanup and revisions, and they needed animators who could draw in the American style quickly.
Wow. So, are you going to come back?
I'm going to come back. I'm not going to be back next year because I'm going to be in Brazil for the 2014 World Cup.
Woo!
Yeah, that's going to be awesome. 2015, who knows? I've had a great time here, and I definitely want to come back.
Sweet. Okay, so why don't we go ahead and take a question here. Right up here, do we have a mic for the audience?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
I just wanted to ask if you had any stories of older cons with, like, the disastrous fallouts and stuff, because I'm a newer attendee, and I only kind of hear vaguely about cons that have happened in the past. Like when you told that story about when you worked at Wizard and you ended up getting drunk at that one con. Of many, probably.
That one con I got drunk at.
Well, that was the one of the really high highballs, you said.
Yeah, yes. That was more interesting days. Personally, and Jess, were you there for Anime Expo 2007?
Yes, I was. Holy shit, what a disaster.
Yeah, so that was in Long Beach, and it was notoriously, like, the worst run Anime Expo, like, of all time. I remember looking at my house, they had a premiere of the Transformers movie, not the animated one, the Michael Bay one, and shit, which of course filled up. And
if that didn't ruin your day, nothing will.
What they did is they put the line for it entirely outside, and this was like Sunday morning, the premiere was at like noon, so I looked out my hotel window and I could see the Long Beach Convention Center from there, or the Performing Arts Center, which is where they're holding the premiere, and there's just this winding line of just otaku just baking and dying in the sun for like 4 hours, just dying.
It was a really hot weekend.
Yeah, it was a super hot weekend, and all the lines were outside, pretty much.
Well, there was no room. I mean, there was no room. They had to put Artist Alley in the main thoroughfare of the hall, and it was. I don't know how the fire marshal didn't shut the whole thing down.
Yeah, it would be like if you walked into the lobby at South Hall here and Artist Alley was just there because they didn't have enough space for it otherwise. But and that was the premiere of that terrible supergroup Skin, which had a huge outside line. They let him in, and they were like two hours late. And then when they came out, they did a 40-minute set, and they played the same song twice. So that was a really bad year.
I remember one year, I think it was 2002, where they had such a problem with the AMV contest. Apparently, whoever did it didn't know video. So they realized, literally as they were about to start, that they had encoded the entire show to DVD in the wrong field order, so the entire screen flickered, the entire show. And so rather than show it to people like that, they just let them all sit there for 2.5 hours while they figured out what to do. The raucous crowd started throwing paper airplanes, you know, like you do.
Right.
And stuck in the screen, and the guy just got, one of the organizers just got on stage and started melting down.
That was the same year. That was 2007.
No, that was way earlier. That was
2001 or 2002. Yeah.
Because the AMV contest was also canceled at 2007 dumb tech reason.
No, they ended up having it like a couple hours, or a couple, I think the next day they had, like, re-encoded the DVD or something.
Yeah, Justin, I don't think it was just the field order problem. I think also they blew out, like, they actually destroyed the speakers accidentally. It was one of those, yeah, every time they would almost have it figured out, there'd be another incredible technical failure.
Those were heady days.
Yeah, I heard a lot about that. For me, it would be Anime Boston 2008, way over on the East Coast. That con is referred to colloquially as Line Con. Because, they they still had registration in-house despite having 15,000 attendees, which at that point, you got to outsource it to a company that does it professionally. And the problem was they had a bunch of computers set up and you would input all your registration info yourself. And you know damn well, if you leave that to people, they're going to take forever to do it. At its peak, the line, the average wait in the line for both pre-reg and registered guests was about 8 to 10 hours. Yeah, there were people like flipping out and crying because they couldn't get in. Like, you know, I'm a friend of the convention, and I went into the operations office that year, and I'm just like, listen, you got to just start letting people in. And they were like, we can't. That was not a fun convention for most people, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, those stand out, but there's always screw-ups generally every year. We sort of have a bit of a privileged existence because we're here as professionals and press and don't have to really wait in any lines for anything, so we kind of have to get the horror stories nowadays secondhand.
I go to Otakon as an attendee, and I don't notice too many problems. You know, they have crowding issues and line issues like every other big con, but I wasn't at the Otakon where the sewer blew up. That was apparently a good one.
You sure that wasn't just the way the convention smells normally? So that was a good question. Let me give you something from the decent bag.
Yay!
Here you go. This is a certain scientific way of done. There you go.
Okay.
Why don't we take another question?
Okay.
Well, this isn't really a question so much as a point of correction, just to clarify everything.
Oh, good.
For the music video contest.
I'm really glad you're
here. This is actually something we discussed last night, because right here in this very room, the AMV room, we were discussing the history of the AMV contest, and we did discuss what happened in 2002 and 2007.
Oh, excellent.
Technically speaking, 2002 was the first time they worked with digital, and yes, there was a field problem. And they kept us waiting because they were trying to fix the problem, but then they finally found out the only way to do it was to re-render it, which would have taken 8 hours for the entire show. So that's when they said, okay, let's call it, have everybody come back next morning. As for 2007, it was finally revealed last night, the secret of what happened in 2007. What had happened was, we were at the Long Beach Convention Center, which is a union show. It's a union location, so we have to pay union wages. We were given, tech crew was given strict instructions that the room had to be cleared by 12 midnight or we would have to pay triple overtime. There was only 1 hour left by the time all the events had pushed the AMV contest back before triple overtime started. So then contest coordinator decided, you know what? I'm going to make a judgment call and I'm going to take the blame for this and I'm going to claim that the DVDs were lost and we'll reschedule for tomorrow. So that's what happened in 2007 was just basically, it was the unions. So that's it. And if my mic gets cut off for saying that, then so be it.
So people know this is former guest of the podcast, Brad DeMoss. And Brad, for that amazing pedantry, I have a prize for you. Come on.
Okay, well, thank you. I also wanted to let you know that I'm very sorry for all the flack that you got for my episode.
Oh, that's okay.
On behalf of the AMV community, and although some people think I'm a poor representative of the AMV community, despite the fact that I've been making AMV since 89.
And you're wearing a suit.
And I'm wearing, well, this is part of my cosplay for later, so. But I really do want to apologize for it. And we also have something for you later if Troy ever gets back from, because right now we're doing the AMV award ceremony, but I wanted to be here to apologize to you personally.
Well, I still don't feel bad about giving you this copy of the Nicolas Cage classic, Knowing.
Oh, Nicolas Cage! It's Nicolas Cage in numbers!
Nicolas Cage on a baseball bat.
Wow, well that, can we flush our brains now? That was a whole lot of awful.
No, that was great. Thanks, Brad. Yeah, so we're still killing time here. Anybody got another question? Yeah, whoever wants to take the mic.
Yeah, bump, bump.
There's not that many of you in here.
Mosh pit.
Nah, don't make a mic. So, personally, I would have actually wanted that DVD of Knowing. I like Alex.
There's a lot more down here, man.
Trey! Maybe I'll get the Wicker Man with Nicolas Cage. Bees!
I actually haven't seen that one yet. Actually, the question I wanted to ask you guys is, when you go to conventions, I'm pretty sure doing stuff at the convention isn't the only thing you do. You do stuff outside of it. So I wanted to know, what do you like to do that's when you go to conventions that's actually not related to convention? Do you go to the Hooters across the street or mingle with the fundamentalist Christians picketing outside for some reason? Yeah, there were actually people outside yesterday.
They're kind of always here.
Yeah, that's become an annual thing. Drink.
Yeah, I mean, my specific answer is I will look for a local brewery or brew pub, like some place with beer that I can't really get in Boston, and I will try to go there. That is what I do.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, in terms of, like, local stuff, I mean, Justin and I both live in the area, and so, like, local stuff isn't really a big deal.
Let's go see the Hollywood sign.
Yeah. Hey, it's Chinese theater. Yeah, that kind of stuff.
Oh my God, his handprints are so small.
So local stuff, not so much. But the draw for us these days coming to conventions, because it is work, is just getting to see all of our friends and after hours going out and, you know, having a few. And yeah, that's the highlight of the show.
So much gossip. We
yeah.
Never so much gossip.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Good question. So let me give you something from the DC bag. Do you like breasts?
Well, that's my sexual orientation, but I wouldn't say that I like these. I enjoy the real, not the two.
He doesn't want Securate.
Hey, why is this in the good bag? Anyway, here you go. Here's a copy of K-On! The Movie. Since you don't like breasts, there you go.
I think I'm going to watch Free.
Let's do another one.
Testing. So, Adult Swim called Man of Steel the longest Dragon Ball Z episode ever. What episodes would you use to compare it?
Episodes of Dragon Ball Z?
We have them mentally indexed. The one where there's a fight.
That's my favorite. It's exactly like that one where Goku is constantly standing in front of a 7-Eleven.
I don't understand the question.
Go ahead, come on up.
Guess which pile you're in.
Please, please!
Okay, for that question, I have the Zac Efron classic High School Musical 2. Sealed, by the way.
It's an extended edition.
Oh, how extended it is. Go ahead, sir.
I saw Gyo last night.
I'm sorry.
There wasn't anything else to do. And then watching that film, I was wondering, have any of you guys seen it besides you, Zach?
Yeah, have you guys seen it? Gyo, Tokyo Gyo. Fish Attack?
Junji
Ito.
After seeing your screenshots, I feel like I have.
Yeah, same deal. Especially the one with the shark, bursting through the door. Yeah. That's pretty great.
Oh, the one that lived in my memory is the farting.
Yeah. There's a lot of it in that movie.
And no, don't forget the tubes injected in.
Oh, yeah. Right, the fart-powered thing.
So how did you feel about that film?
I was going to ask you guys how would you guys survive in such a situation like that? I don't want to tell you how I feel about that.
Well, having to actually watch terrible things for my job for 15 years, you just start pulling out your pocket knife and cutting. You can't really.
I don't think he means sitting through the film. I think he means the Tokyo Fish Attack.
Oh. Yeah, because then I was going to ask you, so are you going to be cutting yourself so they won't have to kill you? Or?
I'm still going with cutting.
I wouldn't survive it. Why would you think I would survive right now?
You would be the first to die.
Yeah, exactly. I'd be swept up by the dog storm.
How would I survive the Tokyo Fish Attack? That's a good question.
If Junji Ito, you won't.
I guess I don't really have a good answer for that. I would realize I'm in a terrible movie, I guess. I'd be like, fuck it, jump into the ocean of robot fish. Anyway, since you asked about a bad movie, you get one. Let me give you a couple here.
Here's a
movie people love, a movie people hate, Nicolas Cage Face Off. That's a good one.
Yes.
8mm. There you go.
Those are good.
on the penny.
Forget James Gandolfini, he's an 8mm.
Almost through the cage stuff. So. Oh, go ahead.
I'd like to preface my question by saying that I really enjoy the podcast. I've listened to every episode. And I really enjoy the site and the changes you're doing to it in the future.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
For my question, I want to know about the future of the podcast, any format changes, or any new sections you want to experiment with.
No. We kind of figured out what works. I put this thing together by the seat of my pants, so it's a really good month when I have the whole month's guests like booked. But normally Monday morning, I'm like, who am I going to have on this week? And I've got to go through my emails and figure out who's good to have on.
We're perpetually running out of guests.
Yeah, because this is episode 161 or something like this of the show.
But there's not that many interesting people on anime.
And the other thing is...
That's speaking English anyway.
So we get a lot of questions about, like, hey, why don't you have Japanese guests on? It's an audio show. So I guess I could have the interpreter talk, but I guarantee, like, that's going to be a real dull thing to listen to. So that hamstrings us. We're stuck with only people who speak decent enough English to be engaging in a radio format. So that gets harder, but frankly, like, we've got enough repeating things now that, we do Super Nerds with Mike, and I do the game shows with Dave and Joel from Fast Karate, and those are popular, and we're going to bring back Super Manga Pals, like, pretty soon. I just have to find someone to replace Ed Sizemore because he retired for some reason. We're going to, you know, I want to find more repeating formats just because that really gets us through the year. And, you know, we do a twice-yearly Funimation show and that kind of thing. And David Williams said he was going to come on this show, so maybe we'll finally get to do a Sentai Filmworks episode. Finally. Anyway, good question. No major changes coming to the show anytime soon.
You're not going to build a studio?
No.
And make it a video podcast like This Week in Tech?
Why not give something that makes almost no money a shitload of overhead? let me give you something from the good bag. Do you like breasts?
Sure, why not?
Okay. Here you go. Here's all of Sekirei. On Blu-ray. There you go. Another question.
I just want to follow up by saying I really enjoyed the Best of the Decade episodes.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. All right. Thank
you. We're out of decades, unfortunately.
No, we're not. You never did 60s. I'll do 60s. People really care about that, obviously.
Yeah.
You heard that one guy.
Thanks, man. All right. Go ahead.
So evidently, Aniplex is releasing a dub set of Fate Zero after releasing the import. Do you think that the model of import first, cheaper-ish dub later would work for them? Or like, do you think it would be backfire versus using the import model only?
Well, I think that all of the, you know, what every company should endeavor, in my opinion, is to get their releases to market in as fast and as accessible a version as possible. I don't see why Funimation and Sentai can do fairly inexpensive bilingual releases and Aniplex just can't. I hadn't heard about the Fate Zero thing. I'm happy about that because one thing that bothers me about their releases is that they seem to do these expensive special editions and then there's never really a regular edition. There needs to be a regular edition, man. I don't want all that special stuff. I just want the discs.
Nobody can hear you. This is an audio show. one thing that you do have to keep in mind is that with a dub, they can actually put it on iTunes. They can actually put it on Xbox. There's a whole lot more they can do with having a dub version. So it's more than just, you know, announcing that you'll be able to buy a disc with a dub. There's a whole lot more a lot more doors that opens up, and potentially a lot more ways to reach new Fate Zero fans. So, you know, there's more good there than meets the eye.
I'm just throwing this out there. I'm so tired. Not that you did this, but I'm super sick of hearing people, every time Aniplex does anything, well, this time it's going to kill them. Oh, this time it's too expensive. And this clearly isn't working, and you're killing the industry. And that never happens, and they sell out pretty much every time, and they're doing fine, and their business model obviously works for them. So, like, every time they do anything, I wish people would stop with the, oh, this is totally going to kill them now. And it's like, no, stop. Like, I'm sure that dub will do fine for them. Like, obviously, that show sold enough, did well enough for them to justify dubbing it.
I mean, personally, I'm a little disappointed that I can't get Gurren Lagann for a reasonable price, you know, for less than the price of a used car. But but the fact is, there's so much anime out there to watch and take in. When something like this happens, it's just like, well, I guess I'll watch something else.
All right. Do you like reverse harem shows that nobody else seems to like?
Yes.
I guess.
Okay, come on. This is Hiro no Kakera season 1. I have never even seen a minute of this, and I never will. Okay, since we're at about the half an hour mark, I'm going to go ahead and bring up one of our other guests. Everybody, big thanks to Mike for stopping by. And let's go ahead and bring up one of our news editors who we've never actually had on the show before, but she handles a bunch of the news on the back end and also writes the Saturday column, The List. Lindsay Lam, why don't you come on? To paint you a word picture, she's wearing a strange hat.
it's really like a beret.
Sure, thanks for the correction. How's it going, Lindsay?
It's great. How are you guys doing?
You know.
This is my first AX, so I'm having a pretty good time so far.
Yeah, tell us about it. How's it been going?
I cosplayed as Sailor Saturn on day one and had a whole bunch of really horrible costume malfunctions. Not like Janet Jackson costume malfunctions, but costume malfunctions. But day two and so far day three is going really well. I got to sit in on the Kick Heart thing. That was awesome. I really regret not backing that. Don't shame me. And I miss Little Witch Academia, but so far most of the stuff that I've attended has been pretty good. I saw Wolf Children earlier, the subtitle for that.
I'm jealous. I haven't seen that yet.
It was good. I thought it was pretty good. It's not my favorite by Hosoda, but it's like mid-range. I liked Girl Left Through Time a little more, but I think it was better than Summer Wars, in my opinion. So that's what I've been up to
right,
so far.
Right, piece of shit, Summer Wars. So we actually have never had anyone from the news team on the show.
Oh, really?
So I wanted you to talk a little bit about what that's like.
Well, with the way the internet has changed news, it's a kind of a 24-hour thing. I work a lot of really late evenings, 7 until whenever, because we're working with Japan time, and they're ahead of us. I handle a lot of the interest stuff, like the new video game stuff that's coming out, or the daily brief things, like when stuff's going to be released, what's coming out next season, what's, all the hottest, latest things. I bring that to you guys with help from my editors, and Crystal's actually been, well, she was at an ANN panel, but I think she's never been on a podcast before.
Yeah, the panel's not the same as the podcast.
Yeah, it's not the same. It's not the same. I listen to you guys' podcast, but it keeps things really interesting. I like being on the up and up of what's going on and being able to share that with everybody, so it's a really fun job.
Thank you for doing it.
Yeah.
I worked that shift once. That was, wow, you guys work hard.
Yeah, we're kind of a skeleton crew. There's only like 4 or 5 of us who put all the news on the website. So, yeah, we just rotate out.
Considering the sheer amount of it, yeah. That's
yeah.
A lot. Okay, so I guess we can take some questions again.
ANN has been going on for 15 years, as I hear, and I want to be like a future reviewer on some website. What tips would you give to new reviewers or podcasters?
I would say, start a blog, start a Tumblr, something. Doesn't matter if your goal is to get hired by somebody, some professional website, and get paid for your work. All that is, it's not a place where you build an audience. It's not a place where you worry about your traffic. It's a place where you publish your writing so that it functions as kind of a portfolio. So you write your blog, Lindsay, you're actually doing this. You review stuff, you do it to the best of your ability, and you work at it as hard as you can, and not only will your writing improve, but you'll have one place where if you want to submit your work to me, you can say, here's my work, and I will go look at it. And frankly, like, that's kind of how I find writers now, is through that. Like, I don't I get writing samples in, like somebody will send me a few Word documents, but the people who really have their shit together on this have one place where they publish all their stuff, and it's as professional as they want it to be, and it's polished and that kind of thing. So that's what I would suggest to you, and almost 50-50, more so, maybe more so on the side of just honing your craft and getting better at writing through practice. It's really, really important. Other than that, I would say work on getting used to dealing with an editor. It's really hard to do that outside of a professional setting, but learning about what the editorial process is also really important, because I've hired people who could not handle editorial and didn't know what really an editor was or what their job was. So they treat their text like it's sacred prose and don't touch my words, and it's like, it's my job to molest your words. So get used to that, like get used to what editorial oversight is. Okay, like I said, hard to do outside of a professional setting, but read about it, I guess, if you can. So yeah, that would be my advice.
I also have a follow-up question. I had one episode of my podcast that was completely like improvised. Is that okay? Because it wasn't like something you were supposed to script. It was more like a talk show, like via Skype. Is that okay? Is it still entertaining for an audience?
That's what we do.
I was going to say. I don't know, Zach. I don't know about that format. It sounds crazy.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like for newcomers, I mean, for like a newcomer reviewer or podcaster, is that really okay?
We have never scripted a show ever. I'm pretty sure if we did, it would just sound like really terrible acting.
Yeah. Actually, I can't even imagine that. What do you mean scripting your podcast?
Well, I'm familiar with that guy with the glasses site, and I know they script most of their videos. However, there's some others who, well, like me, I cannot read a script if it was worth my life. So I said, oh, well, let's just do totally improvised. I'm going to call these people. We're going to talk about something. So we recorded it.
Well, if you can't do a script to save your life, clearly the improv thing is working for you. do what works. That's the thing. Yeah, you have the most important thing to having a good podcast is having an ear, you know, being able to distance yourself from it so you can tell what works and what doesn't. So if you're very impatient with people pausing and trying to think of what they're going to say next, then you know, the audience is probably going to be slightly more forgiving, but if you're aiming that high, you can make the show that much better.
Yeah. Oh, great questions. Since you had two, I'm going to give you two.
Let's see here. Engage.
Three, I guess. Here's a whole bunch of Maria Wunsch's Over Us. Right stuff. There you go.
What are you doing?
That was a good one.
Is your most memorable experience from either just a con or from the show, just anything that really sets in your mind and 10 years from now you're going to be like, God, you remember that? Yeah, man, that was the greatest experience. I realize there's a lot, by the way.
Don't make me start.
Well, we've been doing this for how long?
This is my 15th Anime Expo. I guess the super memorable stuff is all from, like, the first or second year when it was new and I was so young.
Well, I'm sure you include career highlights that just make you go...
I have a personal highlight from last year that I'm not really going to discuss in public, but... Honestly, most of my, like, super memorable convention moments are personal, and I wouldn't share them, but... I guess I saw the Utena movie at whatever Anime Expo that premiered at, and I still remember that screening, and that was real special, and it's still one of my favorite movies of all time, so sure, I missed that.
I think my all-time career highlight has to be doing an interview with Satoshi Kon, where he didn't remember me from the disastrous world premiere of Tokyo Godfathers. Thank God, because that was a career lowlight. To tell the story briefly, what happened was there were these little, back in the 35mm era before everything was digital. What is that sound?
I think it's a buzzsaw.
All right, so anyway, they used to put these little metallic stickers on films, and that was how the projector could sense it and go, okay, it's the end of the movie, turn off the lights and, you know, turn off the bulb behind the projector. Well, in Japan, they still use, like, little individual reels. They don't splice onto one big platter. So in Japan, that means switch to the next reel. So they had stickers on every 20 minutes. So every 20 minutes, world premiere, lights would come up, projector would turn off the bulb, we could still hear the sound going through, everyone would start panicking. We had executives from Sony there, we had Satoshi Kon there, it was just mortifying. So he didn't remember that, and that was awesome. And I was able to, like, towards the end of it, he was, like, clearly just craving a cigarette and just didn't want to, you know, deal with an interview. But towards the end of it, he started to warm up, he started to spill some good info. Unfortunately, that ended up being the last English language interview that was ever published with him.
Mm-hmm.
And that interview was quoted by A.O. Scott in the New York Times in his obituary. And so that was a gigantic honor, what I'll always remember.
That's a great story, but I think she was asking specifically about convention.
she said anything.
Okay, well.
So I guess I haven't been going to cons nearly as long as these guys have, so I guess probably in the last 5 years, it was probably about 5 years, was SoccerCon 2012, and they had Gen Urobuchi there, and they also showed a subtitled screening of Madoka. That was the first time I'd seen it, because I didn't watch any of the fan subs. So that was a spoiler. That's the first time I got to see Mommy get her head, like, bit off. And that was real, that was intense. I remember turning to the guy next to me, like, so she comes back, right? It's like, no. Until she's dead. And it's like, oh my god. And it's become kind of an obsession for me a little bit. I went and saw the movie screenings in Seattle, where I don't know if I liked them as much condensed, though. It just seemed like everyone cried more often, because it wasn't separated out, so there was a lot of crying. But I'm really excited about the third movie, so I guess that's the closest thing that I have.
Yay, crying.
Yeah. Anyway, good question. I got some stuff for you here.
Yeah, manga too?
It's the, a few things. This shouldn't have gone in the good bag, but it's god-awful Rurouni Kenshin OVA. And the first two volumes of Blood Sea, the manga from Dark Horse. There you go.
Sweet.
Thanks.
Okay, so I haven't been coming to conventions for that long, and I was curious, what is the most innovative cosplay you guys have seen? Not necessarily the best, but like the most original idea or the most interesting idea.
I mean, okay, this doesn't answer your question at all.
That's fine.
But I always get really happy when I see a Hamburglar. Just makes my day.
The problem with fandom, anime or otherwise, is that once someone gets a good witty idea, other people copy it, and then it just gets just driven into the ground. So, I have a lack of appreciation for just winning cosplay, because that gets forgotten pretty quick. But the really, really amazing craftsmanship, like, you remember years ago, someone actually did the full Bubblegum Crisis suit?
Was we talking about 10 years, 10,
yeah.
12 years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was my Tucson Anime Club.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. In fact, that was my ex-girlfriend in there.
Well.
I've been doing this a long time.
We are old.
Did anyone see the Evangelion?
Yeah, that's what I was going to bring up. Yeah, there's a guy on stilts walking around as the 01 unit. I mean, that was pretty impressive.
He was really impressive. His posture's a little too good, but aside from that.
He looked pretty tired yesterday. I saw him without the helmet, which kind of ruined the whole illusion, and he looked pretty sweaty and uncomfortable.
That would only work if he looked like Hideakiano.
I think he was a middle-aged white man.
So. Speaking of cosplay, am I the only one that's noticed the blissfully low numbers of Homestuck? Like, I'm barely seeing it, and I'm really happy about that.
I saw Steampunk Homestuck. I don't know if
get out of here.
I don't know if that's...
Get off the stage. Get out of here. I don't need to know that that exists.
I don't know if it's canon or not, because I don't read the comic, but
everything's
there's...
Everything's canon.
Okay, everything's canon apparently on Homestuck. But there are girls walking around in steampunk versions of Homestuck.
Boo to that. Seeing fewer bronies too, which is good.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I honestly, like, I was saying this earlier, like, again, doing this so long, and I hate to be broken record on that, but your eyes glaze over. I don't notice cosplay anywhere near as much as I used to. Like, I'll notice a huge hulking, like, robot or whatever, but even something that's little and neat, my eyes are just, like, I just don't see it. I barely see it at all anymore.
What? I noticed, like, the little cute, okay, I was at the cosplay section here, and there was a child who must have been, like, 18 months old, who had, like, a fully articulated, Cloud costume from Kingdom Hearts, and they had his hair up, and he probably wasn't old enough even to talk yet, but he was really adorable. And then I found out from the people running the cosplay shoots down there that his name is actually Cloud. So the parents.
That poor kid. You're just telling tales of child abuse.
Can you imagine having to explain this at prom?
No, because there will probably be two or three Sephiroths in his class. Next to all the Edward Cullens and stuff.
Is there a commune I'm unaware of?
Anyway, great question. The good bag is starting to run through.
Ask some shittier questions,
but,
people.
But here you go. Here's Darker Than Black, Gemini of the Meteor. What does that mean? I don't know. Here you go. What's up? Yeah.
Okay. Hi, I'm Troy Williams. I'm the AMV coordinator, and I'd like to welcome you to our AMV room here.
Thanks.
I recall there was a bit
of... Are we in trouble?
Oh, no, not at all. In fact, I want to give a little bit of a peace offering, because I recall there was a little bit of controversy in the past. So I want to present you with this excellent piece of cinematic work.
This is a Blu-ray copy of M. Night Shyamalan's The Last Airbender.
Is what they say, you got served.
Yeah. Thank you.
Love your show.
Okay, next question.
I'm just going to preface by saying I think it would make a great hamburglar.
Yeah, thanks.
And just want to say prior to this, I had only vaguely heard of you guys, but thanks to my buddy Franco there in the back, I am now attending this panel and definitely going to be checking out more of the podcast. So my question was, do you guys have a particular favorite guest or a particular favorite episode that would be a good place to start?
Yeah, we got a couple.
They're sort of the greatest hits. Personally, I like the Super Nerds ones the best. I think those are sort of us at our most casual and
fun
rapport-y. But in our history, we did an episode with Chad Keim, formerly of Jenny on USA, who basically just... like they like to say, burned his non-disclosure agreement in front of us and just told us the entire sordid history of that company and all the numbers and behind-the-scenes stuff you'd ever want to know.
Another last known living interview we did, Carl Masek. He was generous enough to just come to my apartment, and we spent like 2 hours going over his entire career history, all of Robotech, all of Streamline, all of the big initial theatrical release of Akira back in the day. I learned so much from that show, and that was, holy crap, was that great.
Yeah, and it was like 2 months before he passed.
Yeah.
I think that was his last interview. That's one of the ones I'm most proud of. You did one with Jake Adelstein, the author of Tokyo Vice, which has a movie coming, and we did about an hour and a half with him, and a lot of people cite that as their favorite. But yeah, we check those out, Super Nerds. If you're into video games, check out the game shows. That's a pretty good place to start. But yeah, thanks for coming by. I appreciate it. Always great to have a new listener.
Hey, you got it. And I just also want to say, thanks for taking the time to make people laugh. I think the world needs a whole lot more of that.
Aww. That means I'm going to give you something from the crap bag. Okay, here you go. Here's a copy. A couple things here.
Oh, goody.
First, Nicolas Cage classic, Gone in 60 Seconds.
Something else, I already have this movie.
Oh, well, yeah, okay, sure.
Ooh. My dad doesn't love me.
Okay. Well, in that case, if you're going to be picky.
Well, just saying.
I'm going to give you a couple of things here. Here's a copy of Disney classic, Camp Rock. You're also going to get the animated classic, Dougal. Stewart. And also the classic Transmorphers.
What's up? So Anime Expo, 07 Long Beach.
Yeah.
I remember that was one of my first times at AX.
Yeah.
Not pre-register. Stood in the standby line to buy tickets for 7.5 hours.
Oh, my God.
Ooh.
My wife was with me to this day. She does not let me forget that.
She's still your wife, though.
She is still my wife. We entered into a contract. Anyway, I know one of our guests is kind of new to AX, and it sounds like a couple people are new here to AX and cons. So I was wondering if you guys have any advice to any newbies out there to AX or cons in general.
Teach me your ways.
Well, pre-register and don't get in the pre-register line until Thursday, I would say, and wait a little bit because all you have to do is wait until the rush is over and you can generally just kind of walk in, is my understanding. Especially do that if you're press. If you're press, don't ever go to the press line right when it opens because it's going to be slammed. Anything you want to get into, I would show up 45 minutes to an hour early, unless it's a smaller panel. Guest of honor stuff, show up really early. I don't know. I always give people this advice, and it's what I follow myself at San Diego Comic-Con, which is dramatically more crowded than this, obviously. Pick 4 things you want to see in a day. Be really happy if you get in and get to see 2 of them. Don't set your expectations any higher than that, and remember, it's just a convention. It's just a dude in a room talking. Don't get too upset if you miss out on it. That's kind of important. Chill. Like, that's a really important piece of advice.
Yeah, I mean, the memorable parts of any convention are the hanging out with friends. It's not what we're doing. It's not what... You know, maybe if, you know, it's a huge highlight to meet a creator or something, someone that you're really, really into. But, you know, it's really just about making friends and, you know, and chilling with friends. That's the fun part of the con.
Cool. Good question. You win a copy of The Last Airbender on Blu-ray. Here you guys, a copy of Tokyo Magnitude 8.0.
Awesome. Thank
you. You again.
Yes, me. I was at the Homestuck meetup. There were plenty of people. You just didn't see them all.
Great.
Is this going to be a defense of Homestuck? Or...
No. Trust me. It's a bitch to get into. No, my question is, how good is good drunk when you're at a con?
How good is good drunk?
How drunk is good drunk?
Pretty good.
Not vomiting?
Yeah, we've all had our stories where we've completely overdone it and lived to regret it.
Yeah, anytime you can wake up in the morning and not be in total pain is fine.
And the thing is, as you get older, and younger people don't realize this, like, once you turn 30, your ability to process alcohol just goes out the window. Like, you know, where it used to take you a few hours to recover, now it takes days. So, like, I can't drink, like, you know, what was that one show, I think it was New York Comic Con, yeah, where Chris and I both did this horrifying array of different shots that ended with Bailey's Irish Cream.
That's gonna curdle in your stomach.
I think it did.
Yeah.
Both of us, I don't think either. We had 10 shots.
10 shots?
10 shots of various... everything different.
No, you're not supposed to mix things.
I know.
They have a rhyme for that.
After that one's inaccurate.
At any rate, there was much pain that night, and there was a hotel room that will never be the same.
I'm not going to name names here or even indicate who was who, but... 2 staff members were staying with a 3rd staff member who may have been partaking. Maybe it was that evening, maybe it was the next evening. But he had managed to paint the walls in the restroom, and they had to go in and retrieve a toothbrush. And I remember it being told the story in very distinct detail. How they had to tiptoe and, like Indiana Jones,
Do I want to ask what he painted the walls with?
Yeah, the insides of his stomach.
Okay.
Yeah, honestly, like, as you get older, you just slow down. I mean, 20-year-olds don't fear or respect the bottle, so you just gotta let them make their own mistakes and move on. Anyway, so I've got something for you here. This is a whole stack of Christopher Hart's Draw Manga Now.
Yeah, I have a
Oh, God. Thank you.
It's cute. My kid might like it.
Okay.
I make them myself.
Oh, cute.
Very cute. Our kid will get more enjoyment than I will. Go ahead.
Well, neat. I think my question was answered with one of the later ones, because, like Lindsay, this is my first AX, but unlike Lindsay, this is my first con in general.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
So, I'm just going to ask.
It's not that bad.
Yeah, it's a good con to start out with, right? Right.
Yeah.
Oh, this is actually a question towards Justin. After finishing up Buried Treasure, what inspired you to start back up with Pile of Shame?
Honestly, I just needed to do more for the site, and since Buried Garbage and Buried Treasure were always popular, it's like, why don't I do that? The problem with Buried Treasure and Buried Garbage is that it was based on, you know, extreme emotions of either euphoria or just wanting to buy an AK-47 and take out a Kmart. So I kind of came at it with a new angle because, like, I need a way to write about mediocrity. So that's why I did that. And hopefully you enjoy it, because I genuinely enjoy about half of those, and the other half I literally rip out of the BD-ROM drive after I take the screenshots and throw it in the trash.
Good question. Here is a copy of Mass Effect Paragon Lost. You may remember it 5 minutes after watching it, but perhaps not.
We'll see.
Hi, all.
Hello.
How are you?
Okay.
I have two questions, and they're both sort of serious, if that's okay.
How serious?
Sorry. First question is, how do you guys do your job when you're going through extreme anime burnout?
Ooh, that is a good question. Being a professional means you just have to keep moving, like, even if it feels like you're trudging uphill in a snowstorm.
I would imagine it's the same for anyone who... because we're in a particularly sort of gifted position where rarely do we need to hate our jobs, but when you're going through extreme burnout, it's when you kind of start hating it. And maybe you don't hate the work itself, but the content is just wearing on you. And I've been through periods like that. I'm not going through one of those right now, certainly. But personally, frankly, I deal with it by only watching anime when I absolutely have to. And I start delegating the responsibility of watching stuff to other people. But frankly, that's only happened like maybe once or twice in the last like 7 or 8 years. And it's brief, thankfully, because once you start truly appreciating like how lucky we are to have these jobs, it gets harder and harder to start hating it or start looking down on it. And, you know, you become a little zen about the quality of the content sometimes, and even like the really, really dire stuff that makes you want to put a gun in your mouth, you're like, okay, well, anime, you know, like you just kind of move on.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that helps me a lot is I just try to, in my off hours, not watch any anime and just even the good stuff, and just go straight for, like, you know, old classic movies or you know, new art house movies. Something just, because what's really killing you if you're going through boredom or if you're going through burnout is that you can't stand eating the same food again. So mixing up your media consumption, just going for a walk sometimes helps. So, you know, it's just, you know, you got to clear out the cobwebs, basically.
I just recovered from, like, anime burnout a little while ago. There was, like, a 5-year period where I didn't watch anything, which is why I haven't seen things like Full Metal Alchemist and a lot of, like, the basic ones that are kind of the foundation of the fandom today. But I don't know. I guess I only watch about 2 things a season. I might watch a couple episodes of the starter things just so I'm familiar with what everyone is talking about. So, like, I kind of know what's going on with Valgrave, for instance, but I haven't watched any of it. Last season, I just watched Flowers of Evil and Attack on Titan, and that was about it. I didn't really watch anything else. There's more stuff coming out this season that I'm excited about.
Really?
Yeah. Free is one of them because I like abs. I like exposed abs. I have, like, a magical girl soft spot, so I'm going to watch that Fate Stay Night spinoff, if it's not totally creepy with it. You know, I'm a little iffy on the character designs on that. I don't know if it's going to be kind of lowly bait or not.
Can you tell how that is pronounced? Because I can't to save my life.
I bought a figure of it today, and I'm going to try, but I'm probably going to fail. I believe it's Fate / Linear Kiliad Prism Ilya. Did I get it? Am I close? No one knows.
Nobody knows.
Nobody
knows. No one's going to correct me on
it. It was an open question. I have no.
Yeah. There's that one. There's that new Aniplex one that's coming out called Daybreak Illusion that I kind of want to watch. The character designs remind me a little bit of the little Western style. And it's another magical girl show, so I'll probably check that out. From what I've heard, the Dog and Scissors show is horrible, so I think I'll skip that, even though I like Dachshunds. Yeah.
You like scissors.
I don't like them stabbed into dogs, which was kind of what I got from the promo. She stabs the dog, like a boy is transformed into a dog, and then a girl abuses him, and like animal abuse isn't funny.
Yeah,
I'm
not gonna watch that.
Yeah.
I don't know. So, you know, it just comes and it goes. Like I said, last season I watched two things. I heard that the Moromi-san mermaid thing was supposed to be pretty funny, but I didn't really get it, so that's about it. Yeah.
Thanks. My second question has to do with anime fandom. And I guess maybe this is the case before I was around, but in recent years, maybe last two or three, it really seems like at a lot of anime conventions and online, not in theory, but in practice, anime fandom has started to include things like Homestuck, Doctor Who, Adventure Time, Avengers, all these different things. And at a lot of conventions, at least on the East Coast where I'm from, you will see more cosplay and talk about these Western shows, both animated and not animated, or movies, or whatever they may be, more so that you'll see people cosplaying and talking about anime. My question is, does that have any positive impact on anime and anime fandom as a whole?
That's just conventions. Anime conventions have sort of turned into, it's mostly anime, depending on the convention you're at. It's mostly anime, and then it's like 30% My Little Pony, Homestuck, Doctor Who, whatever the fuck else. That either annoys you or it doesn't. I'm only irritated when the horde of sort of generic pop culture stuff seems to be taking over and it's not really an anime convention anymore. Or when the only thing people seem to actually give a shit about is My Little Pony, Homestuck, whatever. But that's just conventions in general. And anime conventions, since there's so many of them, have just turned into these kind of pop culture centers. And little ones, especially now, are starting to rebrand. Turn themselves into generic nerd conventions, and I've been saying this for years, that generic nerd con will be the future. We're gonna see less anime conventions and more just internet culture cons. I can't see that not being the future. If only just because it's not like anime is having explosive growth in popularity or anything.
Yeah, I mean, that's already happening. We have VidCon's next month in Anaheim.
Right.
That's all like YouTube weirdness convention, and that just sounds toxic to me.
Yeah. You don't want the internet to manifest itself in real life.
Look like one of those Katsura Otomo piles of garbage.
Yeah, really. But anyway, good questions. Do you own an Xbox?
No.
Okay, shit. I gotta get rid of this thing somehow. All right, I'm gonna give you a copy of this thing that Funimation put out called Girls. Not the HBO show, some other thing. I have no idea what this is. Go ahead and take it.
It's not Warren Demihard.
There you go.
It's got a dollar sign at the end, so you know it's good.
Oh, so we're in our last half hour. We're gonna bring up our last guest. Everybody give Lindsay a hand. Thanks for joining us. Last guest, someone really hard to get on the show, can't even tell you guys. You know her from That Guy with Glasses and jaysotaku.com. It's Hope Chapman.
Didn't actually know it was coming up here, so. Hi, everybody. What up?
So, it would be really weird for me to be, how's your convention been doing? So why don't you talk to her about that?
How is your convention doing?
Same question, different voice. Good. This is my second AX, and I think last year I came here, and I'd never been to a convention this large, and I was like, well, I don't know if I'm going to like it. And I said at my panel last year, this is the best convention I've ever been to. You know, I was just having a great time. So yeah, I mean, I like the bigger cons, I like the industry panels, I like kind of seeing the largest wad possible of fandom and like how it's evolving. I like people watching a little bit in that regard. So, and I mean, like, bigger
cons. It's a very moist wad, isn't it?
It depends on where you're walking. But yeah, it's been a lot of fun. It's a bit more lax this year. I'm not like rushing to as many things because I hear about them from like you guys. So. Yeah.
Good times. Any highlights so far?
Just meeting new people and hanging out with them. Yeah. Okay.
That's fair. Yeah, the little cons, like, I have a tough time going back to little cons now because it's like, it seems so boring and none of my industry friends are there.
Yeah, well, of course, well, it's the coolest thing in the world when you've just never been to a con before or whatever. I think my first con ever was MTAC, which is a Middle Tennessee anime convention, which is in Nashville-ish, and it was the coolest thing I'd ever seen. There was only, I think it was like 4,000 to 5,000 attendees. It's not real big, but I was just... You know, I thought it was just the neatest thing, and I was meeting, like, you know, other fans of things and talking with them, and now that's old hat, and, like, I get on Twitter to do that. But, you know, so stuff changes, but, you know, it's been a good AX.
Cool.
Yeah, I guess we can go back to questions now. We got about another 20 minutes to kill.
Hey, congratulations, Justin. I think you look much thinner than your voice would suggest online.
Thank you. I'm like, you're like the fourth or fifth person to tell me that, and I am dying to know what everyone thought I looked like. Yeah, I did that. I just looked like one of those giant mountains of lard that they have to forklift out of bed or something.
I'll just keep that to myself. The question I had is, what other podcasts do you guys listen to? It doesn't have to be anime, but anything in any other industries to kind of give you some direction or some inspiration for what you guys do?
I used to listen to a lot more podcasts. I used to listen to a lot of the LA area comedy podcasts. That's kind of gone away because it's sort of like the same 30 people on the same 10 shows or whatever. So now it's kind of narrowed it down a lot more. I don't listen to any other anime podcasts. Every now and then I'll check out an Anime World Order, but that's about it. But I still listen religiously to like Giant Bombcast and Jordan Jesse Go, the occasional What the Fuck. That's kind of it. My podcast consumption has gone way down in the last like, couple of years.
Yeah, me too. There's I used to listen to a lot of NPR podcasts, but I'm in a position right now where it just doesn't come up that much. I just don't have time to just sit there and listen to audio. I have to listen to other things because I'm working with video. So. I still listen to, there's an entertainment journalist named Leslie Gorenstein who takes particular delight in getting questions from Middle America about how Hollywood really works and just destroying their dreams. That's called the Fame Fatale. It's probably the gayest podcast I listen to, but it's a lot of fun. Some music podcasts, some trans podcasts.
I don't listen to a whole lot of podcasts either. I used to, but that's sort of like my free time for normal Joe talking about their opinions has been forked over to like video reviews. So I watch pretty much all the Shea Apocalypse stuff, almost not all of it, and then some here and there, some YouTube-y people, and some of the that guy with the glasses stuff. But most of my like people that I liked on Tig are on Shea Apocalypse. So I just go there, you know, that kind of thing. But you know. Not a whole lot of time for podcasts either, because, like, you know, the video reviews are, like, 20 minutes instead of an hour, like, podcasting. But, yeah.
Oh, and I love New York Fiction Podcast. That gets me through plane rides.
Just quick follow-up. Have you seen the Princess Knight guy since that podcast?
No.
No, we're convinced that he didn't know where he was. He didn't know what he was doing, and, like, I don't think he even knew it was based on a comic book or anything, like...
He didn't seem to.
He was just some weirdo that wandered into the bank. I guess. Yeah. He'll never know how famous he is. All right, good question. However, I'm running out of good stuff. Let me see what I got here for you. All right, here's a weirdo Trigun manga. And do you like Dragon Ball?
I've never seen it.
Okay, well, you can start from the end. Here's middle episodes. There you go.
Hi, fan of the Big Fan of the Show, second time, long time. Based on the way you talk, I've noticed certain things when Zach is in a difficult situation where he doesn't like what's going on, he's disappointed. You usually tend to go on a raving rant and you cuss a lot and you're very angry. And Justin, you tend to when you're put in a difficult situation which you don't like, you tend to be very depressed and sad, and you think of thoughts of suicide. And of course, you're always bright, so that's good to listen to. But my question is, what childhood experiences have you encountered that caused such divergent reactions?
I was about to say, you accuse Zach of getting really hyperactive and ranty when he's upset. I'm more familiar with the. Go back to being silent, but you know, reaction to distress. But
so you want to know what negative experiences in our childhood inform the way we respond to stress and negativity as an adult?
Probably better understand the voices behind the podcast.
Holy shit.
Dig deep.
It was June 1986, a hot summer day. I was home from school for the summer, and my father looked very disappointed. You'll never make anything out of yourself, son. That's a really personal question. I don't know.
Come on, Zach, be funny about it.
I can't really answer that. I mean, I'll answer my therapist about that, but,
I think for me, what you're actually hearing is more of a presentation thing. I don't think that I would be served in a lot of cases if I'm really upset about something to rail against it in a public space, because I do things other than this podcast, and that would have negative results. So you're actually getting tempered, Justin, and if I'm really upset about something. As my coworkers will attest to, if I'm actually upset about something, everyone knows. Everyone. I am the least pleasant upset person on the planet. So be grateful that I'm really carrying that, because I will, yeah. I'm not a good person.
You know what? That's true for me too. I don't get ranty and angry really in my personal life like I do on the show. If I'm mad about something, it manifests itself in a different way.
Yeah, you kind of get quiet.
Yeah, I get quiet. Yeah. It's weird. It's not like you're not getting the real us. It's just that when you're speaking into a microphone in front of people, you tend to heighten things a little bit for entertainment value. And it's not really a conscious thing. It just happens.
It's like a radio personality?
I wouldn't call it that. It's a middle ground between radio personality and who we actually are.
It's Zach saying, well, this is how I feel, but I have to put it through the, you know, entertainment filter, and me saying, well, I have to put it through the diplomacy filter. It's still what we're thinking, just filtered.
Yeah, there's a big difference between walking out of a movie and going, oh, that really sucked, and walking out of a movie and then standing in front of a microphone and you have to talk about why it sucked.
When the director might be listening.
Yeah, yeah, that kind of thing. So, that's an interesting question. So I'm going to give you this. produced by Gen Fukunaga. This is an incredible Christian film called Last Ounce of Courage.
Oh, God, no.
Yeah, enjoy. Or not.
It will take your last ounce of courage.
Hello there. Long-time listener, first-time caller. So, my question is, if you were to describe Miyazaki, Shinkai, and Hosoda with Disneyland rides, which ones would you choose?
That's a good question. Shinkai would be a bench in front of some flowers. Because ride suggests entertainment value. I would say Hosoda would be Peter Pan's magic flakes, maybe? And Miyazaki would be the ashtray in front of Tom Sawyer's island. Spend a lot of time at Disneyland.
I'm going to go a different tag. Makoto Shinkai would be It's a Small World, because it is. And let's face it, when you're on a small world, you're just kind of mentally doing your taxes.
Or clawing your brains out from the inside.
I've just shut down entirely. I'm somewhere else. I'm in a happy place. Let's see. Hosoda would probably be Splash Mountain, because it's not as memorable as you think it is when you're riding it, but it's still a lot of fun. And Miyazaki would probably just be the Cinderella's Castle, because that's the only thing everyone knows about anime. That's the logo. If we had anime director as a logo, it would be a grumpy Miyazaki anime.
Been to Disneyland like 2 or 3 times, so I'm just going to go with their answers.
Good question. But I know you from another thing that we do. So that means you're going to get the thing everyone's been waiting for. You win this copy of Fred the Movie.
Yay!
You again.
I'm actually upset for you.
Speaking of Princess Knight, guys, I wonder if there are any other interesting personalities you met at a con that just strike you as, this person's flat out delusional.
A quarter of the people that you meet at a con?
Well, like the people who are convinced that they will go to Japan and become the next animator in 5 seconds. Those sort of people.
Oh, I was going to say, like, fun stories of the time we've met the Japanese creatives who are eccentric or something.
Oh, that's better.
Well, it happens quite often that, like, you're in a circle with a couple other industry friends, and you get this one guy who nobody knows that just kind of tries to cling on to you like wet toilet paper. And you just can't shake him no matter what. And at some point, you have to, like, talk with your eyes to your actual friends and, like, try to, like, figure out some rendezvous to meet at later so you can ditch him. That has happened at almost every convention I've been at in the last 15 years.
That was me with Zach last year. Where am I? Who are these people? You're my friend.
Yeah, that happens sometimes.
Not that we're not friendly, but, you know, if we're all talking over you, that's usually a sign that we're kind of done. Let's see. As far as crazies go, we kind of don't talk to people.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, oh yeah, I don't interact with anyone except my friends at an anime convention and, like, guests of honor that I have to. And, you know, we have you find people here, and we get one, usually get, not this year, but we usually get, like, one crazy guy.
Oh, what about Bizarro Mike Tool?
Oh, yeah. Bizarro Mike Tool.
He's here, I've seen him. I wonder if they've been in the same room. There is a guy who looks kind of like Mike Tool, but is, like, a little off.
A little. A lot off.
Fear for my safety off. I probably.
Yeah, we're all talking about
okay,
the same guy.
Yeah. And I just kind of wanted to see them in the same room together because I wanted to see the, you know, universe collapse in on itself.
Yeah. Now, for people who listened to last year's live show or maybe were here for it, he was the one who came up and was like, doesn't everybody hate 4Kids? Like, expecting the room to applaud or something like that. And he kept asking questions like that. And, okay.
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah, anyway, him. You've won, like, a million things. Do you want something else? Actually, we only have like 15 minutes left, so you get up here and take some more stuff.
Okay, that's that.
Here, you can have this copy of Gone in 60 Seconds. there you go.
All right. Zach has devolved to just throwing bad things at me.
Hello again.
Hello. This question is more for Gyeza Otaku. I noticed you have some kind of character on the show. What influenced you to be this kind of character?
Well, I would say that that's actually, when it comes to me, a bit of a fallacy. I think you could say that to a lot of people that do the Tigger Tigger video review thing. I would say people assume that because everybody says it, and for me, it's not true. I have a demeanor, I have a presentational style, I'm like, hi, I'm J.O., and this is da-da-da-da-da-da, but, I don't, my voice is not that high. That's Edward, that's, like, really high. But I'm just myself. Like, I don't put on a character because I'm just talking about my opinions on things. My sketches, when I do them, don't have enough time to have a character. It's just a dumb joke or something. So I would say I don't have a character. I would say I just, you know, kind of exaggerate my emotions a little bit, and that's about it. The only time I've done a character is when I do stuff for Doug.
Hey, I remember you guys talked quite a bit about the fact that in Japan there aren't really any journalists or critics who are reviewing anime the way you guys do. It's mostly just like publications that are like in the same studio, inside the same studio. They don't like do serious criticism of the works that come out. So I was actually wondering, because of that, have you guys ever thought about maybe opening a anime news network for Japan that does like preview guides and the stream for Japanese readers?
No, because it wouldn't be received very well. And if we've actually taken heat from Japanese companies for the preview guides.
Seriously?
I have been specifically asked to please tone it down. I didn't, but I've been asked to please tone it down. Our style is Western style. It doesn't fit with Japanese press, and they would cut us off from everything almost immediately. In fact, this is a good question, and I want to tell everybody to go buy the newest issue of the Colony Drop zine, which you can get on Mad Cloud. There is an amazing article in there with two guys who wrote for New Type and Animonish, and they just spill it. They just tell you exactly what it's like working in Japanese entertainment press, which functions as a wing of the PR machine of the anime industry. And they're extremely candid about what is expected of them. It's a really good article. I regret not publishing that myself. But go get that Colony Drop scene. It's really, really good. But yeah, just our style would not be accepted by... It's barely accepted by them right now, and that's because we're Western. But yeah, it's
plus, none of us know Japanese anywhere near well enough to do that.
Yeah, that would require us hiring an entire new staff.
And not knowing how to evaluate their writing.
Yeah.
I'm really just surprised that the Japanese side is actually reacting to you in the preview guide. I didn't expect that.
They have read our stuff. We've gotten feedback on the podcast before, every now and then. Anyway, come up and take some stuff because we're running out of time here. Here's a copy of Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans.
Ooh, actually, a great movie.
And here goes Shingu, Secret of the Stellar Wars.
Yes. Holy
crap, you won the lottery. Yeah. The Bad Lieutenant movie is effed up. It's really good.
I love Werner Herzog.
I actually have two separate questions, somewhat related to each other. First question is, what was the first thing that got you into anime, and your first impressions of it?
We've answered this question like four times over the weekend.
Yeah.
I'm a big cliche. My first exposure was... Well, actually, my first exposure was because I was raised in a Christian household, was this anime called Superbook and the Flying House. It's two different things, but it was produced by the same company. But I didn't know what that was. So my first exposure to knowing what anime was Pokemon and Digimon. So where I'm like, hey, this looks different, you know, and then I looked into it, and then I read some manga like Fruits Basket, and we watched, that was around 2004 or so. So pretty much anything that was on Adult Swim or really easily accessible, because I didn't have internet in 2004. And because I'm kind of an invasive, must-know-about-this personality, it didn't take long for me to just start looking into what it was. And I knew what anime was and knew I wanted to be kind of involved in it and learn more about it really quickly. And it helped that I was a big animation nerd, too. Like, I like all kinds of animation. It's just like, oh, this has a broader swath of content to pull from. And, I don't know. I feel like I've been an anime fan for, a really long time. So.
I remember when I was a kid, Nickelodeon was kind of a new thing, and they didn't have much original content. There was a lot of dubbed anime on there, but, little kids' anime. And my mom would say, hey, you can tell that's Japanese. Look at the eyes. I'm like, you're right. Okay, cool. And then HBO used to show Warriors of the Wind, which was hacked up Nausicaa, which I could even tell in that state was a good movie. And I'm like, oh, that's Japanese too. And then, the wall of old VHS releases of Blockbuster. I'm like, oh, 17 plus, what's that? And the rest of the history.
Very, very first exposure was probably syndicated episodes of that really short-lived Dragon Ball show. No, Dragon Warrior show.
Oh.
That was on, it was syndicated, Dragon Ball show. Dragon
Warrior.
Hey, same guy, right? Yeah, no, Dragon Warrior, that was, for whatever reason, in the tiny little markets in rural Arizona. And then I think Nickelodeon stuff, like Mysterious Cities of Gold, and then somebody gave me a Lum comic in high school, and then that changed everything. So, yeah, anyway, come up and take some stuff. We're gonna,
okay.
Oh, you had another question. We gotta make it snappy, guys. We got 5 minutes.
Okay. Second question, real quick, was running the site and everything. How do you guys continue to, I mean, besides getting a paycheck, continue to run the site and not get burnt out and just keep doing it? Because I know I was at your earlier panel on Thursday, and you guys said that you guys love your job and everything. But what keeps you guys going?
Just the paycheck, or not? That's not true. We genuinely like what we do. It's not hard, you know.
This job is really rewarding on a number of different levels. I'll just say, like, the most recent one is that Justin and I are both in the special thanks credits on Kickhart just for having them on this podcast. Which you look at that and you're like, okay, I have a pretty cool job.
Don't ask us that. Ask the guy at 7-Eleven. He has it rough. We have it really easy.
Yeah. Anyway, come on.
I have a question. I just wanted to ask
it. Well, hang on, let me just get you. You win a Vampire Hunter D novel and a copy of Next, starring Nicolas Cage. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah, so I don't have a question. I just want to know, can I take the Gears of War?
Yes, you can.
Yes!
Yay! If anyone has one more question, you're just going to get this stack of crap.
So my question is...
He's totally having second thoughts, looking flinch.
So my question is there any anime you dropped and then maybe a couple of years later you decide to get back on the series and then your reason why for doing that?
Yeah, Wolf's Rain. I dropped it because I hit the episodes where, you know, the recaps and then it takes a long time to really find its bearings again and I kind of, you know, wandered off and just forgot it was there. And then for actually an earlier podcast, Zach had me go back and rewatch. I'm like, holy crap, this is the best thing ever. So, yeah.
Dropped and then picked back up again. Yeah, plenty of stuff over the years. I'm notorious for kind of dropping stuff early. And then when it finishes, everyone tells me I got to see it. So I go back. Monica is probably the biggest one because I sort of dismissed it as, this looks neat, but it can't be anything too interesting. And then went back and watched it and said, oh, my God. So, yeah.
Yeah, probably the most interesting, like, all the time, like, because I usually listen to the very beginning of something, and then, you know, whatever, but the most recent one that struck me was one that's, like, taken years and years to come out, is Hellsing Ultimate. I saw, back when I was reviewing Hellsing for the first time, people were like, well, you didn't see Ultimate, and I watched, like, the first couple OVAs, and I was like, that's a bit, and then it came out on Blu-ray, and I was like, well, I'll go through the whole thing, and I still haven't seen all of it, but all that was released, and I was like, this is really great, like, I didn't really respond to it the first time, but I was enjoying it. Like, I have a major, like, lady crush on Bert Van Winkle's. Like, that's a great character. And then, well, she's gone, but she was there briefly. She's a really great character. So, Hellsing Ultimate was really cool. So, yeah.
Huge lady crush on Nazi Sniper. No.
She's fun!
Okay. All right, man. So that...
Nazi Snipers are fun.
Yeah, come on up and take the stuff. Here you go. You are winning a copy of Thunder Pants, a British movie about a kid who farts into space. Wicker Man, the Recess movie, spools out a Superman OVA that really blows, another Nicolas Cage movie, and speaking of Hellsing Ultimate, the first volume of that. Thanks for taking that stuff off my hands. Thank you all for showing up. We really appreciate it.
Have a great night, brother.